You're listening to Penny Johnston with ABC Baby Talk Podcast.
It would easily be the worst possible thing that could ever happen. The death of a child. The death of your child. How would you cope? How would you even be able to put one foot in front of the other, let alone keep going with a normal life? Nicola Streeton has the answers to some of these questions, at least as they pertain to her own experience, the death of her own two-year-old boy, Billy. She's written and drawn about her experiences of the worst loss of all in what's called a graphic memoir. Billy, Me and You is heartbreaking and funny, as all grief is. The things you'd never imagine yourself saying or doing, and the life you most certainly never imagined having to live. Now, this podcast recording is as a result of a Facebook request of someone who wanted to know how to help someone through their first Christmas after losing a baby. What do you say? How do you help someone going through this difficult time? Well, these are questions I hope that you never need answered, but Nicola has dealt with these issues, and so I asked her to tell me some more about her book, Billy, Me and You.
It is a gut-wrenchingly sad story, and it's, of course, based on the worst thing that's ever happened to me, the worst experience of the death of my child. However, what I was aiming to do with the story, which I see more as an art form, is that I was trying to reflect on how society deals with the taboo around death and grieving, and how actually when I was making it, I realized it was also something of a love story, because it's not about just myself, but it's also about John, who is my husband and the father of Billy. So it's about how we dealt with it together and how we dealt with the people around us. So actually what the story to me in my mind is about other people's reactions to my reactions. And so I'm presenting my reaction back, if that makes sense. So it's part of that is what I hoped for is, and what I've heard back from my readers, is that there's also some very funny bits, because people, we all in situations with people who've experienced trauma say the most ridiculous things, and they can be viewed as quite funny in that way. We don't mean to, but we're so anxious about not upsetting people further that we, and I do it too, that we say inappropriate things. And so there's one page in my book where I'm judging people on what they say when I tell them my child has died, and they say things like, oh, you must have another. And I do a little marking system, so it's something like 9 out of 10 for certain responses, and so that's quite, it's quite shocking really, that because people think that when you've lost, you know, when you're a bereaved person, that they sort of assume you're a victim, but actually you can still have really quite judgmental thoughts of other people at the same time. You don't suddenly become not yourself, you just become very sad all the time and more critical of people around you. One of the strong motivations behind making the book and making it in a cartoon style was that when we were actually in the hospital before and after Billy died, I was desperate for people who had the same story as me, and I found myself reading, there was a publication, a magazine in the hospital, and there were stories in there of bereaved people, and they were short, you know, life experience type couple of pages. And I read, and also I do like to read. So after Billy died, I was reading all the time about, you know, death and grieving and what happens to you. But I was also conscious that not everyone enjoys reading prose. And so the idea of you can sit down and you can read my comic book or a comic book in an hour and you can get it. So it's less taxing on you. When you're grieving, you're very, very tired and can only take so much. But I think so that was part of why I thought the comic format, well, I still think it is very good, particularly for stories of trauma. So that's one of the things. I have had a very, very positive feedback from people coming to discovering my book and finding that it helps, or it because it makes you feel less isolated. reminded that you're not the only person in the world who's going through this thing, that there are other people out there, and it's in a book, so there must be more than one person who's experiencing what you're going through.
I jotted down a question which might sound a bit strange, and I was going to ask you, and of course you were completely within your rights to be allowed to be, but do you think that you were a bit highly strung? I mean, because you are sort of operating at a different level, and you know, people have an expectation of how you're meant to respond, but the people that I've been closest to that have experienced terrible grief are often a bit odd and don't fall into any sort of category that people outside that circle can ever possibly understand.
Highly strung, I think, is interesting.
Well, and completely allowable. I mean, you know, you really...
No, but I mean, what I mean is I certainly saw it was a... both John and myself looked back and it was a certain madness that we were in for a lot longer than we thought at the time. So after 5 years, when, you know, my story finishes and we left London and moved to a derelict chapel, we were still acting in a way that was quite extreme, and we were still, certainly near the beginning, I would say quite hurtful things to people just because I wouldn't tolerate people saying stupid stuff to me that upset me. I suppose you do react differently to how you were before. It certainly changed me, and John, I know, as people, we became very different overnight and still are different, but and probably still quite highly strung. I think we were before. And we were after. But I agree that someone who's grieving would be different to how they were. Obviously, they're going to be different to how they were. So they might do things that appear strange.
Yes, and...
Oh, there was one thing, Penny, I forgot to add, which is when I did come to writing this graphic novel, it was 13 years after my child had died. So it was... I think it would have been a different... story, or maybe the story the same, but it would have been presented very differently if it had been done immediately after Billy died. Because when I came to writing it, I was looking at my journals that I kept, my prose journals, and during the whole process of making the story, I didn't cry and I wasn't upset. But if I'd done it at the time, I would have been distraught, you know, really not coping with it at all, and so it would have come out as very raw, whereas this is considered and very constructed, really. It's very thought about, and I mean, certainly to anyone listening who is, or anyone who's going through the grieving following a death of a loved one, it's what I found particularly this year is people have been contacting me because they want to know that there is a future for them, and they want to look at me and see how do you know, I'm in this first few months after the death of my child or my spouse or whatever, and I can't imagine it ever getting better. So I've met with people and said, well, you know, it doesn't go away, but you wouldn't want it to, and you can continue your life and great things can still happen within your life. So this year particularly, it's been quite interesting for me to find that.
That was essentially the reason that I wanted to contact you, is because I was asking people on Facebook about what we should talk about, and somebody just typed in, it was surviving Christmas after the death of a baby, and I just went, oh, no, of course, it's not going to be the same again. I guess that was the other reason that I wanted to talk to you, is that you've done it from the perspective of distance, can perhaps hold out a little bit of hope to us that are still in that really raw state.
Yes, I mean, I when I talk about the time, although it's now 18 years,
wow,
in the past, and when people ask me about the time, it is crystal clear, it all comes back, and the first Christmas was, I mean, it was absolutely terrible, but we decided to spend Christmas Day with friends who had been very close friends who we'd met through Billy, and their child came and they came, and you know, we spent Christmas together, and actually it was all right on the day. I think sometimes you dread the first anniversary of the death or the first birthday, but yeah, I think personally, I think it's important to have something a plan, something in place that you're going to do, whatever it is, and to get you through it. So something to kind of, you're allowed to be cheered up. You're allowed to cheer yourself up. And we did have a good day. It's just this awful gap in your life that really, I mean, certainly the first year, I think famously people usually say the first year is the worst, and it's, then there's this massive anniversary and Christmas, things like that, and then it keeps going, but it slowly gets easier to, or you know what to expect, perhaps, with each year that passes.
It sort of strikes me that the grief can kind of come in crashing waves, and there are some tiny lulls where you might be cheered up by something, or things sort of feel almost normal, and you suddenly react to feeling normal and realise what's happened, and do the normal gaps sort of start getting a little bit longer and the crushing, drowning feeling getting a little bit less over time?
Yes, it does. And I remember actually quite a few years later, Billy died in the autumn, and I remember feeling really sort of anxious and worried just about life in general, not thinking at all. And then a friend said, oh, well, of course, it's the anniversary of his death, and didn't Billy die around this time? And I suddenly thought, oh yes, it's deep in your subconscious, it's there. So you might, something might happen, the waves that you talk about, you might feel really terrible and think it's about a job or, you know, something completely unrelated. And of course it's probably something deeper going on in your, well, it's such a cliche, isn't it, the time heals, but it does. I mean, it heals, but it never goes away. But as I say, I really say strongly, you wouldn't want it to go away completely. You wouldn't want you'd want to have the scar and wear it proudly, because you don't want to forget. So there's that side. But at the same time, it's not, I don't think it's bad to forget. It's part of life. And I mean, as I say, for me, 18 years have passed and I'm actually forgetting anyway, because I'm 18 years older, which is quite shocking. But it's also part of how life, I think it's part of how we develop as people, so that as we get older, more of our friends and family start to die, but we have this shield because we're forgetting more and we're slightly less anxious all the time anyway. You see what I'm saying here?
Yes. When you talk about annoying things that people say, and number one possibly must have been, oh, just go off and have another baby, while it was possibly the worst thing that people could say.
That wasn't that, sorry to interrupt. In fact, for me, that wasn't the worst thing. It was quite a nice thing, but that was just me. I think the worst thing that we both felt was people saying nothing. So we would, I know John went back to work and a colleague had briefed everyone, don't say anything, this has happened, because it will upset him. So poor John went into work and no one acknowledged that he'd had this awful thing, and he came home absolutely devastated. And because people around you are always, you know, there's nothing malicious at all about, I mean, it would be unusual for people to be malicious. It's just that we don't have the social structure around us to all know how to deal with it. So, for example, I was talking just the other day, in Victorian times, people wore a black armband for a year however long, and how sensible that is, because then you'd know to be kind to people and that they're still grieving. But I think as well, the other thing is that after a week or so, people think, oh, yeah, you know, after the funeral and cards and letters, and then people, and you go back to work and people assume you're back to normal and you're better, but of course you're not. It goes on and on for years, but in waves, as you mentioned. So, but you don't want to suddenly have your loved one excluded from the conversation. So for example, if people are talking about their children, you want to be included, you want reference to your child to be made, even though your child might be dead. And what other awful things did I think? The worst thing to do is to say nothing. And the nicest thing is just say, I'm so sorry for your loss. It's simple, straightforward, and unlikely to cause offence. So that seemed to be. And then I found if I say it to people, they can, then they can volunteer whether they want to talk about it or not. So it's a thank you or yes, and then you can take the conversation along, let the people guide you.
I guess the other thing that surprises me as well is very often immediately after the event, when everybody does want to talk to you about it, you feel less like talking and things can crop up 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years later when you really do want to talk and everyone just sort of assumes that you've got on with things and moved on and you're okay.
Yes, that's a really interesting one because it's a little bit like everyone wants a bit of you when your child, it's all there for me, I think. It could be your loved one's eyes. And what I've realised, part of that is because they, your friends and family, are also grieving. So they want, so it's tricky because they need their grief recognised. And I remember it feeling very strange. Suddenly we were invited to dinner parties. Everyone wanted to talk to us. And then, as you say, 6 months down the line, people don't. Although there are always a few friends who you know or family who you know you can always talk to. But in our case, we did straight away. First, we found bereavement groups specifically for parents of bereaved children, and we found that a great solace immediately. And for several months, we went, and it was run by parents who'd been bereaved or by charities. And there you can, you know, there were people whose children had died years ago and they were there. It was a platform where they knew everyone wanted to talk about their loved one. And so they did, and they could talk about how they were feeling. And that was really nice. And then we found we wanted, other things were coming up that we wanted to deal with that were related to our child dying, but perhaps not specifically. And so that's when we went to psychologists. So we went for regular meetings for about the first year, both of us, first separately and then together, for help, professional help, because I think it's important to recognise if you need help and you feel you're not coping or you do need to talk at a deeper level. It's important to get professionals who are trained and will be able to guide you through what you're going through. There's no shame in it.
It's really not. And if the first one doesn't turn out to be any good, go find another one and keep looking until you find someone that you can really work with, I think.
Yes, I agree. And to a certain extent, that happened to me, that the first person I saw didn't really know what I was talking about or what to do with me, and then exactly referred me to someone else and it was fine. Very helpful.
And the having another baby, did it actually help you?
Completely helped me, but we did consciously wait for, I think it was a year. I wanted straight away to have another baby, and I think it was wanting to replace Billy, and I think if we'd rushed into it, it might have been more difficult. It wouldn't have been Billy and it would have been painful, but our daughter Sally came along and it really was a salve for me, and to John too, to a certain extent. But I think it was all I wanted was to be. It was also I became a mum again properly. You know, I could be recognised as a mum, and that was something I had really lost, the status.
It is the absolute worst thing ever that can happen, isn't it?
It is. Well, I don't know. There is, but then again, in my book, I dealt with, you know, which is, you start getting into this mind games with yourself. Well, is it worse if it's a 10-year-old child or a one-day-old baby or how they die or the situation around it. But actually, it's all the same in that it's just part of life. It's the only guaranteed thing is that we're going to die, and it's just nature, really. We're here with that deadline, and it's a similar feeling, I think, whatever the circumstance, when we lose something that we love.
But your best piece of advice for us, if we know somebody who has lost a child and you suspect that Christmas is going to be a bit tricky this year, what would have helped you if I was giving you a call before Christmas, Nicola?
Well, I think invitations are really nice from friends or family. And you can always say no, or, you know, you can invite someone, we'd love you to come over, but of course we completely understand if you don't feel like it, don't be polite. sort of way, so it's worded in that way. I think that we appreciated that at the time, and just a phone call is always nice.
Getting hold of a copy in this modern day is a case of going online.
Exactly, that was just exactly where I was going to direct you. If you type in Billy, Me and You, it should come up.
Nicola Streeton and her graphic memoir, An Illustrated Recollection of the 5 years following the death of her two-year-old son, Billy. Now, you can find your book in the usual online bookstores. Because as Nicola Streeton is based in the United Kingdom, it might be hard to find a copy in your local bookstore. But I hope this podcast has helped. And if nothing else, shows that time does heal and that not all memories have to be painful. Baby Talk is on Facebook, and over the Christmas break, we're going to be on the radio as well. So for details, do check out the Facebook page, or you can follow us on Twitter as well. ABC Baby Talk, one word, will track us down. Maybe you've even got a story idea or a suggestion for us as well. It would be great to hear from you. We'll see you next time on Baby Talk.
Baby Talk.